Baby, ¿qué pasó? Thought I was your only vato. Hey, baby, ¿qué pasó? Please don't leave me desde modo.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Rametown Riot. I'm here truly with vocalist Bobby Lloyd.
Yeah, man of many talents.
So he thinks.
Like to break it out for you guys.
Yeah, awesome voice. Alright, let's jump right into it here, Bob. So let's start.
Episode 23 of The Riot, people. It's getting serious.
Yeah, we're up there.
Up there, Michael Jordan.
Hey, 23, a big, good number, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we got a special episode for you guys today as it's the start of the NFL season. And we got a breakdown on the Lobo football game, Matt. Break it.
College football, week two.
Yep.
So, me and Bobby are both UNM alumni, diehard Lobo fans. I played for the Lobos. Bobby loves the Lobos as well. And the Lobos this weekend had a huge game, a chance to go 2-0 against their arch rival, Mexico State. And what happens? Lobos fall just little short.
Tough weekend, man.
It was a very frustrating game. So to break down the game for you, the Lobos got off to a really early, fast start, scored on their opening possession, looked good, were winning the whole first half. They never stepped in the throats, though, which was really frustrating. But the biggest play, I believe, that happened was at the end of the first half, the Lobos kick a field goal to go up by two scores. And they kick off the ball to the Aggies, and the Aggies get the ball back with 21 seconds left and 69 yards to go to score. And what do? First play from scrimmage, 49-yard play. They end up scoring a touchdown with 4 seconds left in the half. So they scored a touchdown in 17 seconds, traveling 69 yards at the end of the half. So that was a big disappointment. The Lobos, however, still went into halftime with a two-point lead. And they came out of the third quarter and scored first. Had another good-sized lead. And then they gave up the lead with 5 minutes left and failed to produce a game-winning field goal drive.
It sounds to me, Matt, like the Lobos might be struggling with their mental fortitude and just staying strong in the mental aspects of the game. Giving up points like that when the other team has bad field position and almost no time management, the bad time to give up a play, especially considering they could have gone into the half with an even bigger lead. And then,
not just the lead. I think that a lot of that goes into just momentum. I mean, yeah. The Aggies were heavy underdogs in this, and they're a very young team. And by giving up a touchdown at the very end of the half gives all these young players hope and confidence going out of the second half and all the momentum. And I think that is just crucial to a young team's state of mind.
Especially for a secondary like the Lobos that's supposed to be established and experienced and have the advantage mentally over an inexperienced team like
the Lobos defense is returning 10 starters this season.
Yeah. It's just, it's tough giving up a scoring drive in the fourth quarter to lose the lead. And it's tough making a big mistake at the end of the first half, by not, just giving the other team momentum, like you're saying. I think you're saying something, you mentioned to me earlier that Bob Davey had maybe called a bad play, or the defensive coordinator had called a bad play in that particular
Bob
offense.
Davey came out saying that on the 49-yard pass play, that was right before the end of the half, that was a really bad defensive call. However, in my opinion, I don't care if you're in man, zero coverage, blitzing, you're in prevent defense, whatever it is, you know the situation and you make something happen. You have to be smart. And it just did not happen there. You're right. The play call does make a huge difference. But either way, it's just very frustrating. And I really thought when the Lobos got the ball back with 5 minutes left that they were going to engineer a game-winning drive. I really thought they were going to get in field goal range. And they started driving the ball, and then they just sputtered. And it's just so frustrating. The Lobos, under Bob Davey, again, don't go to 2-0. He has so many opportunities for Lobos in the 5 years that Bob Davey's been to go 2-0.
And I mean, it's especially tough for us to deal with, considering that it's our rivalry game. It's the Aggies, you know. These teams absolutely hate each other. We get so riled up for these things. The entire state is kind of in a frenzy whenever these sort of games play out, because the majority of people that went to college in this state either went to UNM or to New Mexico State, and they just kind of breed hatred for each other. You know, up here at the University of New Mexico, every time we're about to play, the students get together and they burn a big Aggie burn.
Johnson Field.
Yeah, Johnson Field is big. I hear down in Las Cruces that they capture a wild coyote and molest it. So I'm not sure exactly what they do down in Las Cruces, but there's sick rumors about what they do. Either way, the hatred is deep between these two teams.
Is that what you just came up the top of your head, molesting?
Yeah, a wild coyote is a semblance for the Lobos.
All right.
I mean, this is Albuquerque. We don't know, like, things that seem culturally normal to us are not what's culturally normal to people from Las Cruces. They got weird things going on down there.
This was Bob Davies' first loss to New Mexico State in his career. So Bob Davies has a great record against State. And one really big thing that's happening surrounding this team right now is whether they should go to a two-quarterback system. You have last year's returning starter, Lamar Jordan, who is the second-string quarterback, and the starter is Austin Apodaca. Apodaca is more of the passing threat, and Lamar Jordan is more of the triple-option running threat. And so, Bobby, how do you feel about a two-quarterback system?
So I've got some big questions about going to a two-quarterback system. One being, I believe, I haven't played as much football as you, so I'm not sure how it affects the rest of the roster. But in my experience with it, I understand that the starting quarterback position is extremely important in terms of leading the team, kind of being the spearhead for morale on a lot of rosters, right?
And, yeah, he's the commander in chief of your team.
Yeah, and so dividing that responsibility up between two guys might kind of take the luster and just kind of the shine and respect away from either one of those two guys potentially. And then the other thing is, if say you break it up and you have two guys, one guy that you like to use for your option offense and one guy that you like to use for passing downs, it's sort of tends to give the defense a hint as to what sort of play you might be running based on what personnel you have in the game, and maybe make your offense a little more predictable. That might be a plus or a minus, because obviously both guys can play. Like Apodaca can run, not to the same level as Lamar Jordan.
Apodaca had a great touchdown run,
but he is good in the running game. And then Lamar Jordan, of course, can throw the football. So.
Yeah, Bob, so I
tell me about your opinion. I don't know.
I would agree with you to an extent. I think that for leadership standpoint, having that leader and having that person that everybody looks upon on the offense is really important. But I look at it more as Apodaca has a lot of things going for him. He is not a deficient runner. He can run this system well and make plays running the ball as the triple option. Because no mistake about it, the Lobos are a running team. That's our identity. However, if we can get a decent quarterback that can make those throws that you need to make to keep the defense off balance.
Just keep them honest.
Yeah. Honest, exactly, honest. Yeah. Allow those safeties not to play so high in the box.
Uh-huh.
Those big plays, when you have a chance, have that quarterback that make those plays will make this offense go to another level. And I believe that if we want to ever get over that hump, if we want ever to stop being out of mediocrity, and we want to get to the point where we will compete for a conference championship and these things, we need a quarterback that can do so. And I believe our ceiling as a team is much more enhanced with Apodaca growing as a quarterback for the Lobos, whereas Lamar Jordan comes in and runs a triple option very well, but he's limited in other areas. And that's just my belief.
So you have faith that Apodaca can become proficient enough in the passing game that he would allow us to have a more respectable passing game and open up our running offense a little bit more.
I agree. I think, yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think that the growth of him, Apodaca, I'm saying, has the potential of taking Lobos to other heights.
So what's with all the talk of the two quarterback system then? What's going on there?
Well, there's rumblings around Albuquerque and rumblings around Lobo fans that would like to see a two quarterback system where you bring in Lamar Jordan. He's too good of a player to be on the bench. He's a great runner. He runs the offense very well on triple option, and he would be a better suit for our team. However, my thing is, Lobo fans, don't overreact. This is one game. It was a brutal loss. 13-point favorites. You should win this game. There's no mistakes about it. No mistake. However, there is optimism. I believe Apodaca has shown enough as a runner and a passer to make plays. However, in this game, Apodaca was 12 for 23, 115 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So he was not good. I mean, that's...
Well, this is my initial reaction, right? So 31 points in an away game, in a highly emotional rivalry game early on in the season, putting up 31 points doesn't really seem that bad to me. It seems like maybe the defense kind of let us down a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's how we opened the show. We're talking about this defense. Their defense is returning 10 out of 11 starters. You expect the defense to come up with big plays. You're playing New Mexico State, who is not a bad offense. That quarterback is underrated, some good receivers. However, they are not a top-notch offense. We should be able to hold them. And that last touchdown for in the half is just brutal.
Yeah.
But I agree. The defense is the one. The defense will carry us. If the defense can be decent, our offense will put up points. Lobo's offense is going to put up points. However, the defense will carry us this season. Can you get those timely stops? Why was Lobo so good last year? Our red zone defense was on the top of the nation, and we forced a lot of turnovers in the red zone. Timely stops wins games. Turnovers wins games.
Big time.
That's how it works. And one more stat on the Lobos passing. Under Bob Davey now, the Lobos are 1-11 when attempting 20 or more passes. That's a pretty interesting stat there.
Yeah, it is. It just seems like, I mean, that seems to suggest that we shouldn't even try to pass the ball.
It's a little deceiving stat, though, because the Lobos have lost a lot. It's not like they are winning 9 games a season.
That's true, yeah.
So you never know. Some of these losses can be when they're already trailing by 3 touchdowns and they need to try to come back.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
You know, it could be a deceiving stat. However, I think it is important, though. That is an important thing. And, Bob, I have a question for you. So how much optimism do you still have for this season?
I gotta be honest with you, man. I'm not ready to put a nail in the coffin just because we lose one game that's a rivalry game, and I don't think that we need to overreact. I think there's still a lot of reason to have optimism. Obviously, we can still come back and win a lot of games. I think we don't need to make huge roster adjustments and make huge changes like shake up our starting quarterback situation or anything like that. I mean, if we can find a way to utilize Lamar Jordan in other ways to make our team better, because obviously he's a great athlete, then that's a great option for us, you know. But I don't think that at this point in the season it's the right time to press the panic button on one loss and an away game.
I agree. It's a rivalry game, a brutal loss, disheartening as it could possibly be. And Bob Davey, his quotes after the game, this is from Bob Davey. There's probably a little bit of panic in Albuquerque because we were favored to come down here and win this game. Larry Rose, and their middle linebacker, and their starting running back were out, and they still beat us. We'll rebound. It'll be a tough few days this week, but we've got enough character, we've got enough heart on this team that we will dig down and get things fixed. So there's a lot of, obviously Davey's going to come out and say these things as a coach. I mean, that's what every coach says. However, I do agree that this next game will symbolize their heart, their character, and it'll be huge. And I think this is a good transition to their next game, Bobby. And they play at Rutgers, a Big Ten school that is 1-1 on the season. They got crushed by Washington at Washington, but Washington is a top 15 school. They're a really good team, but they got crushed. And then they came back and they crushed Howard the next week, But Howard is an inferior opponent.
So we don't really know what we're looking at with Rutgers.
We don't know too much about Rutgers. However,
they got beat by a team that's way better than them, and then they beat a team that they're way better than.
Correct.
So it'll be an interesting game.
Correct. And it's the big thing is that they have to travel to the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's a long travel day.
Early game.
The game is at 10 a.m.
10 a.m. So talk to us. Tell us what a 10 a.m. game on the East Coast means for Lobo players.
So what it means is that the Lobos will wake up at, the most likely their wake-up call will be at 6 a.m., 4 hours before the game. They'll have immediate breakfast. They'll get food in their system. They will have a short meeting. Then they'll go back to their rooms and get in their suit and tie and all that. And their first bus will leave about 2 hours and 15 minutes before to head to the stadium.
Okay.
And, yeah, they'll get
and
prepared.
That's tough, man. 6 a.m. on the East Coast, that means 4 o'clock here, 4 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Am I right about that?
That is correct. And you got to take into account that a normal game, the Mountain West Conference doesn't play these normal early games like this. This is a Big Ten thing. The Big Ten is known to play the first game of Saturdays. So this is very unique for the Mountain West Conference teams, for the Lobos in particular. And will they be, I don't think they'll be physically prepared, but mentally. Will they be mentally prepared to go out there and do that? They have less meetings on game day. How will this affect them?
And it's tough. They also will have, I think they're dealing with some injuries.
They are dealing with some injuries. You are correct.
To key players. Who's the players that
Dakota
are
Cox. Know,
Dakota Cox, our defensive captain.
Terrion Gibson.
Our defensive player of the year from last year. And
he's a great player.
Yeah.
He's a great player. And
absolute stud.
Yeah, he hasn't come on officially that he's going to be out, and Terrion Gibson as well, the starting running back. However, things do not look good.
And considering that there's a lot of questions that need to be answered for this game, I think it's a game that the Lobos can win if things go their way. But considering that they struggled mentally in their last game, and they're missing some of their leaders, a leader on offense as well as a leader on defense, they're dealing with a change in elevation, a change in humidity, a change in the time of game that they play.
The
what
big
time
difference.
They have to
one,
wake up.
One thing to clarify with you, Bob, is I want to make sure that our listeners understand it's 10 a.m. Mountain time is the game time.
Okay.
10 a.m. Mountain time, which is equivalent to their time here. So it wouldn't be 4 a.m. here. It would be still 6 a.m. Mountain time they're waking up.
Okay. So it's not 10 a.m. Eastern time.
Correct.
That they're playing at.
So it's still a really early game, though. Much earlier than normal for Mountain West Conference games.
Yeah.
And one thing I thought was interesting, Bobby, is that Vegas right now has Rutgers favored only by 4 points. So you got, this is at Rutgers. This is a big thing. And it really shows a little bit of respect for the Lobos because, I mean, Rutgers isn't a great team. They don't have a lot to show yet. But still it shows respect because a home team normally gets at least 3 points as a towards that team either way. So it's almost like Vegas is saying this is a toss-up game. Let's give it to the home team.
I hope so, man. I would like to see keys to the Lobos to win this game. Control the ball, really.
Control the ball and turnovers.
Yeah.
Turnovers, control everything.
Control the ball, keep the running game strong. I mean, if they're able to move the ball on the ground the way that they do, I could easily see this game going their way.
Let's just say, the
defense is going to have to step up and make plays.
They haven't done it all season, so we'll see if they can do it now. And I really just think, get back into my last point on this, is that this will show their character. This will show their heart. This will show they can bounce back and play a tough environment, a tough game really to play for something they're not used to, out of their comfort zone. How will they respond? All right, Bob, so just give a quick shout out to the LoboLayer.com.
Oh, I love LoboLayer.
They're a fantastic website. If you're a true Lobo fan, check them out. Lobo Layer. That's L-O-B-O.
Yeah, if you want to get in on the conversation.
Hold on. Let me get the website real quick. LoboLayer.com.
Great forum. Informed writers. People that are just love Lobo football. Love Lobo basketball. We appreciate all the talking points coming from there. We hope to have some listeners and really enjoy.
Yeah, if you guys have any Lobo talk, any questions, any things you want us to dive into, hit us up at RaintownRiot@gmail.com or on Twitter at RaintownRiot. All right, Bob, let's transition now here to what do we got?
Well, I got to put a quick ad out there for Steve Gomez. Steve Gomez, you are the man. We're happy for you supporting our IT department. here at the Ringtown Riot.
Steve Gomez came in clutch. That's what I was going for when I said, what do we have in store for us? But I like it. Give me Steve Gomez a shout out. I like it.
It's an important move for us. Steve came in big when we needed him. Big save on our IT department. Thank you, Steve. And now, transitioning to what's been on all of our minds this whole time.
Let's go! NFL season is here.
Been so long, dude. Gosh. Preseason couldn't have lasted much longer, and now the NFL season is finally here. And didn't disappoint.
Not at all.
Yeah, a lot of great games.
So, Bob, NFL Sundays are sacred to me. I love it. I'm the biggest nerd ever. I have NFL Sunday ticket. I have the two TVs up there.
Yeah.
On Sundays, I literally don't really sit down much. I stand up. I have both remotes in my hand. And I'm just constantly going back and forth with each game, trying to catch as many things as I can. Red Zone Channel, this and that. And damn, I love it.
And your phone constantly on, checking all your fantasy scores.
I have some fantasy. Oh, Bobby, I think I popped your cherry on DraftKings. I got Bobby on some DraftKings this weekend.
That's right. I haven't jumped into daily fantasy sports yet, but I logged into it this weekend. It's your recommendation, man. It's a ton of fun.
DraftKings is a blast. You guys haven't tried it.
I won a bunch of money. I tripled my money. It's just fun. It gives you a little bit more spice on game day, and I'm going to continue to play all season, no doubt.
It's really unique. Really unique. But all right, Bob, let's jump into some big takeaways from this NFL Sunday. So my first big takeaway is the New England Patriots are the hands down favorite right now to win the title.
God, it sure looks so, dude. The way that they walked into Arizona and manhandled a team that's supposed to be contending for the Super Bowl, and while they did that, they were shorthanded.
They were without Gronk. They were without two starting offensive linemen. They were without Brady. And they still beat a team that is competing for, that is one of the favorites for the Super Bowl in the NFC.
And the team that they're beating is like, I can't imagine them being any healthier.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah. That dives into some statement that I've been wanting to make. I just realized this when I was watching that game. There is not one person in the NFL as important as Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, most important man in the NFL.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I feel. I just don't feel like any other, there's no quarterback, there's no coach, there's no front office guy, not a running back, not a linebacker, not a single man has the impact on their franchise that Bill Belichick has. It just seems like no matter who you put out, every year they're getting key players signed away from their team. Every year they're getting front office people signed away from their team. So,
Bob, when I first hear that, it kind of takes you back for a second. You're like, no way, that can't be right. Like, that's ridiculous. You're like, it has to be a quarterback. Or it has to be one of these big-name quarterbacks. It has to be someone like that because, I mean, that is a bold statement. The most important guy in the NFL, that's bold. But then I sit back and I think, I'm like, damn, what? Look at all the impact Bill Belichick has on this game. The New England Patriots have been a powerhouse for almost 15 years now.
Yeah.
They are always competing. They are setting the tone. They are a trend-setting team, first of all. His coaching strategies are practiced by every team now to certain degrees of what they can handle. But, damn, it's hard to argue with that. The way he game plans, the way he does things that are just so superior to every other coach.
It seems like his ingenuity level is quite a bit higher than any other team's front office. Like, whatever team they have, whatever they create game plans catered to their players' strengths. They make the most of, it seems, everyone on their roster. They find talents that other teams have given up on or that other teams haven't utilized, and they turn them into great contributing players for their teams.
Well, it kind of reminds me of, like, the Spurs and Popovich, right? Like, if you make a trade with the Spurs, you're like, oh, shit, I probably lost this trade. I feel like the same way with the Patriots. You make a trade with the Patriots, you probably lost.
It's not even lots of times I just feel like they're able to make lemonade out of their lemons, you know?
That's why.
That's exactly what happens. So you may have lost your trade, but there wasn't any way you could win it because the talent that you gave up wasn't something that your front office or your coach could utilize because he's just not at the same level as Belichick.
Because they have a number of person behind him that's coached up so well, they won't be so deficient at that spot from losing this great player. What the Patriots do so well is they get rid of a player right before they are due a big contract. Yeah. Right before they're due a great big contract. And what that does, it saves the team money and cap space. They sign their great, great players with Gronk and Brady. And after that, they coach so freaking well, put their players in positions to win better than every other player. But I agree. I think it's a great takeaway. And God, it's a great, great statement, Bob.
Yeah.
So what was another big takeaway you had here?
So this is my next bold statement. We'll see if you agree. I don't think in the fourth quarter of an NFL game, I think Russ Wilson is the scariest quarterback to be playing against.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Russ Wilson. That's the guy I'm going with. You don't want to play against him in the fourth quarter. You just
I'll let you explain your case first.
Okay. I just think with his one thing, just his gut and his heart and his moxie, the guy always seems to make big plays, but I just don't think there's anyone that's as unpredictable as to what he's able to do. He's so hard to pin down with his ability to extend plays. He makes up for lapses from his offensive line. He gives his wide receivers time to get open. If nothing else works, it seems like he's always able to scramble to be able to get enough yardage to extend the drive. Like, I've just seen so many fourth quarter comebacks by him, and I don't think there's anyone as hard to stop at that stage in the game.
Okay, I disagree with your point on a lot of levels. I believe there's at least four quarterbacks ahead of him, easily. Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, Roethlisberger. I'll take any of those. Well over him. First of all,
Rodgers is the one player that gave me pause when I made my statement.
How not Brady?
I just so predictable with Brady. You know what you have to do. You have to get to Brady. Granted, it's not an easy statement, but at least he's stuck in the mud. You know where he's going to be after he snaps the ball, and if you're able to get there, you're able to stop the drive, right?
Yeah. But the difference is you're saying, okay, Russell Wilson has a scrambling ability. Okay, because Russell Wilson doesn't make his hot reads as quick as Brady does. Okay, he doesn't see that hot route where the blitz is coming from. He has to go and scramble and find an open receiver. Brady sees that hot route and hits it for a freaking touchdown. He reads the ball so fast, gets the ball out like freaking precision.
Brady's the man. He's obviously shown himself to be up there with clutchest athletes of all time. And he does get the ball out quick and with precision. I just don't want to play Russ Wilson.
Your whole point, what backbone this is that yesterday the Seattle Seahawks came back from a deficit to the Miami Dolphins, scored in the final seconds to beat the Miami Dolphins. And that is what backburned your thing. Like Russell Wilson had another fourth quarter game-winning drive. However, that overshadows the rest of the game. They were awful on offense that whole game until that last drive, which give him credit. He has a moxie. He has something about him that makes him thrive in those pressure situations. He handles it very, very well. However, God, you watch the rest of the game. The rest of the game, they were awful. They were not good on offense.
Now it looks like they might end up in the single digits in that game. I just feel like your team has to hold the Seattle Seahawks they have to shut them down last drive of the game to win the game. I just feel like almost impossible. Russ Wilson just seems to get it done.
Yeah, the only reason why Russell Wilson's in this game is his defense is so damn good.
Interesting.
Drew Brees can't say this. Anyway, we'll agree to disagree.
Okay. All right, move on.
All right. My next one that I want to talk about is the Oakland Raiders.
That's good because I wanted to talk about Drew Brees. So let's just cover this Oakland Raiders, New Orleans Saints.
Well, this game was crazy. Yeah. This game was so much fun and excitement. It did definitely live to all the hype. And if you didn't see it, the Raiders won 35-34. And Jack Del Rio, the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, went for two with 47 seconds left, trailing by 1 point, and capitalized when Derek Carr completed a pass to Michael Crabtree.
How about that confidence?
Holy crap.
They just knew they had that one. They must have known that. And Crabtree made it look easy. They made the whole thing look easy. It was just a quick, Crabtree's bigger man than the guy guarding him, gets up into his chest. Seals him off, jumps higher than he can jump, goes up to grab the ball, made it look like child's play.
Oh, big time. And so my little story for a while watching this game, my brother came over and his nephew. My brother's a diehard Raiders fan to death. And I'm a 49ers fan, but I still like the Raiders because my whole family likes the Raiders. But I was yelling at the TV. He was yelling at the TV. Kick the extra point. Don't go for two because the odds didn't make sense. However, it paid off.
Confidence.
Confidence. And my thing with this is I think this win could propel them into the future games of the season with confidence. You have this young team, young up-and-coming quarterback. This win right now can really accelerate them and make them play better the rest of the season. This was huge. The coach and the players have so much confidence now that something Oakland has not had in a long time, and I'm really excited.
Derek Carr beat Drew Brees in a shootout. How many people can say that they ever beat Drew Brees in a shootout?
You're right. Derek Carr looked
short
really
list,
good.
There's a short list of guys that could say, like, yeah, I went into a shootout with Drew Brees.
In New Orleans.
And outscored him. Yeah. And that's not anything against Drew Brees. The New Orleans Saints put up 34 points. That's usually enough to win most football games.
Drew Brees is 37 years old and passed for over 420 yards and 4 touchdowns.
That was my statement on Drew Brees. I still think he deserves respect as an elite quarterback in the NFL, which at 37 years old puts him in a pretty unique company. There's not many guys.
He's still elite. There's no question that. And one thing with this Raiders, though, that I want to get to is they spent so much money in the offseason on their secondary, right?
Yeah.
Sean Smith, Reggie Nelson, all these players to come in and really sure-hand it. First-round pick from West Virginia safety, Carl Joseph. And they really struggled.
They spent a lot of money on
their secondary got torched.
Yeah.
They got torched.
Did you see that 98-yard run by the 98-yard pass, Brandon Cooks?
That was right on Sean Smith.
Ooh!
Sean Smith, the big $40 million player out of this offseason.
That's how much they paid him?
It was 4 years, $40 million.
Cooks made him look like a joke, dude. Left him in the dust.
Boy, so what happened is first and goal from the 2-yard line. Seattle Saints are backed up in their own red zone. And what do? A straight streak. Brandon Cooks, first play, 98-yard touchdown.
I mean, I'm not sure anyone in the league could hang with Brandon Cooks on a streak. Like, I'm not sure exactly what's supposed to go on there, but it looked to me like a coaching lapse because I'm all right, so there's just one guy going to guard Brandon Cooks. There's no safety behind him, no support at all, and then they just run right past him.
That's a good point, Bob. I wouldn't put on a coach because this is something that all teams do. You're trying to stuff them in there, trying to make it really difficult on them, and you trust your corner. What Sean Smith's got to do here, though, he's got to get hands on the receiver. He's never going to stop Cooks on a streak. Cooks is insanely fast. You get paid all this money, you're a 6'1 lengthy corner. At the line of Hughes press coverage, you got to get your hands on him. Force him off his route. Dictate the route. Slow the timing down between the quarterback. That's what you get paid the big bucks to do. If he had a release, completely beat Sean Smith on the release, left him in the dust.
Yeah.
Probably, him in the dust.
What, he was 10 yards ahead of the guy by the time he got in the end zone?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's so fast.
Once they had to sub Sean Smith out of the game.
Yeah. Sean Smith got benched for DJ Hayden, a bust first-round draft pick to this point. I still think it'll get better for Oakland. Interesting thing is Khalil Mack was unheard of in this game. Bruce Irving had 2 sacks, but Khalil Mack, nothing. He got double teamed most of the game, but still. He's supposed to be he is a great player.
You know what, man? In my opinion, I've always thought this. When you're a defensive player and you're drawing double teams, that just means you're making it easier for your teammates. So a lot of people said that about Dominican Sue. They would say, look, he's not putting up these huge sack numbers. Why is everyone so high on him? Right, and it's because he's getting double teamed at the line every single time, which is making it easier for blitzers, making it easier for defensive ends, and whoever else is playing to make plays on the off. Like, takes away 2 guys at that point. You're playing after that. You're playing 10-on-9.
Bob, I would agree with you, but if Khalil Mack was an all pro in 2 positions last year, first time ever, and so he's put on this pedestal as one of the best players in the league. I put J.J. Watt on the same pedestal, obviously. Mm-hmm. J.J. Watt still makes all the plays. So if we're putting Khalil Mack up there with J.J. Watt status, prove it. You're going to double team.
I think he's got a lot to prove if people want to put him up at J.J. Watt
status. That's the status he's getting. When he gets all pro in 2 positions, that's the status he's going towards.
Wow.
He's not quite there yet, but this is his chance to prove it. Double teams you beat. If you're one of the top five best defensive players in the game.
Yeah, I mean, you're not surprised when J.J. Watt beats beats double teams.
So that's just my point there.
And same thing with Ndamukong Suh when he's in his prime. He's able to make plays through double teams pretty frequently, too.
Yeah.
So, if that's the player he's expected to be, I'm just impressed that when you draw a double team every time, I think...
Well, you have respect. You have respect in this league.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, moving on. What else you got over there?
I wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit here, Matt. Because I was surprised when I'm watching the Cincinnati-New York Jets game. And I was surprised to see A.J. Green just kind of manhandle Darrell Revis.
Whew.
That was a matchup I was really looking forward to watching.
Darrell Revis got torched.
Yeah. Darrell Revis.
Absolutely torched.
Yeah. Didn't look good.
A.J. Green had 12 receptions, over 150 yards, and a touchdown. 12 receptions.
It's huge.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be Revis Island.
That's as good a game as anyone could ever have. And he made...
Andrew Green was having some nice, strong pina coladas on the beach in Revis Island over there. He was making home. I think Revis was his servant off there.
He puts up his own little A.J. Green tent, and he's enjoying it. He's got his recliner. He's on Revis Island having a sun bath. His wife is playing with the kids on the beach.
He's just yelling, "Everything's perfect. Darrell, Meatloaf, Revis, Meatloaf.
Revis, go get me another pina colada with one of those sexy little umbrellas." Yeah, dude, Revis didn't look good.
No, he got torched.
So Revis has been respected around the league as a top lockdown corner in the league, and maybe he's falling off a little bit.
He is getting older. He had a good season last year.
That you think, if you look around the NFL, who's some guys that you think are the top lockdown corners in the NFL?
It's a good question. The first one that jumps to mind is Richard Sherman. I mean, the reason why is because he has done it year in and year out multiple times. And the key to cornerback play is you don't give up the big play. If you get burnt, that's why Sean Smith got benched. Gave up two long touchdowns.
Yeah.
Big plays kill a defense. Richard Sherman doesn't give those big plays. Say he gives up a big play 1 week, he's so good that he'll get blasted for the next 6 weeks on that one play. But he doesn't consistently ever give up big plays. And I think that is kind of in the NFL.
He makes a tackle. If his guy catches the ball downfield, he makes the tackle.
Correct.
The guy doesn't get away from
him. He has incredible ball skills, too. Plays the ball very well in the air, highest point. And I just think that's crucial. You can't give up the big play. And it's just, you don't have a lot of shutdown corners. I'm going to think of the other ones.
Some other guys that have been named as top cornerbacks in the league for a while, Patrick Peterson, I think.
I would agree. So Patrick Peterson, I was really down on for a couple of years. So people didn't really talk about this much, but not last year, but the year before, he had an awful year. Patrick Peterson was not an elite cornerback. Still made the Pro Bowl just because of his name, but he was not. People torched him. However, last year was a huge bounce back year for him. Came back to Pro Bowl level, shut down corner last year, and then sure enough, in the first game this year, he dominated. The other corner for Arizona got trashed on, the rookie, but Peterson dominated. So I would put Patrick Peterson up there.
Josh Norman's a guy that has a lot of respect around the league. Just came off a potential defensive player of the year season last season. So
I think Josh Norman has a lot to prove this year. I think if he wants to be considered the best corner in the league, this is his time to shine. This is his chance to get away from that Carolina front seven that made him look so good because they're one of the best front sevens. And he's moving to a different system. In Carolina, he played a lot of zone on the same side. He didn't really follow the best receiver or any of that. So it'd be really interesting to see now that he's in this position what he will do. Will he really shine in this, or will he kind of fall back and fade into just being a good player, not a great player? You love Josh Norman.
I'm a big fan of Josh Norman. I mean, I think athletically, just one of the absolute best athletes in the NFL. Great hands, great read. Another guy, like you were saying, Sherman has great ball skills. Norman has great ball skills. I was a big fan of him. I'm excited to see what he can do away from Carolina to see if he can step up big for Washington.
I agree. I got an upcoming corner, Xavier Rhodes for the Minnesota Vikings. Very good corner. Up and coming. He's not got all the limelight yet, but he will.
You expect him to make the Pro Bowl this year?
I expect him to.
Exciting. We'll see.
That Vikings defense was great this weekend. Oh, man, they were good.
So a lot of strong quarterback play in the
NFL that's what I wanted to jump into is some quarterback play that really stood out to me. As we talked about, Drew Brees, Andy Dalton was fantastic.
I feel like that's sort of the expectation for Andy Dalton.
What? Not in this situation. This was against the Jets.
Yeah.
Jets are a very, very good defense.
Supposed to be,
And he was well over 300 yards, multiple touchdowns, and his completion percentage was through the roof. He was outstanding.
It just seems like beginning of the football season, Andy Dalton has a reputation for coming out hot, or at least he should, because it seems like he does this every year. Like, Andy Dalton, Cincinnati Bengals, look like one of the best teams in football for the first 10 games of the season, consistently, for like the last 3 or 4 years.
It's really the Bengals. All that matters is playoffs. They're going to be judged completely on playoffs. They're a really good regular season team for multiple years now. But they haven't won a playoff game.
Expected to make the playoffs. Be interesting to see who wins that division. One of the toughest at the top.
Yeah, the Steelers would be great. The Steelers would be the
Steelers and
the Steelers are my Super Bowl pick.
Be really interesting. Ooh, Super Bowl.
That's
why
my preseason Super Bowl champion pick was the Steelers.
But now you're changing it to
No,
the
I'm not
Patriots.
Changing anything. I'm going to stick the same thing.
Okay.
I Steelers Cardinals, which is a little interesting.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But
yeah,
another.
I mean, it'll be. That's a heated race at the top of that division. I expect that to be close to see either one of those teams, whichever team gets to 13 wins, they'll probably get it. I expect both of them to be around
13 11. Wins. That's a lot of.
I think which one of them isn't going to win 11 games?
11. I can see. I think 12 games is much less than 13. It's only one game, but it's actually a big difference. I don't know.
I know it's a big difference. I think either team is probably going to win 11 or 12 games.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
So another quarterback that played great, your boy Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, Matt. He was on fire, man. He's making the right call every time, leading that team with control. And another thing I liked about Matthew Stafford that I'd never seen from him before, he looked like a freaking beast, bro. Looked like he's been in the gym all summer. Like he lost the bad type of weight, gained the good type of weight.
I believe he got married this summer. Maybe it was because he was working out so hard to look good for the wedding.
Yeah, or maybe he's just kind of settling down and not out partying out on the beach so much, less alcohol. Who knows what it is? Whatever. He looked faster. He looked stronger. And he just looked smarter. There was none of those like Matt Stafford plays where it was like, oh, what are you doing? Which have kind of plagued him up to this point in his career. We didn't see that at all in week one. There's not a single play where it's like, I mean, sure, there's an overthrown ball here, an underthrown ball here, miscommunication with a wide receiver once or twice, but overall, he looked like, if he plays that way the rest of the season, elite quarterback. Like, that was beast mode.
Now, he was great, and my favorite thing is he just distributed the ball. No more Calvin Johnson, have to throw to him 15 times a game. He distributed the ball all over the place.
He spread
it around.
So
many weapons, yeah. And I think that was really intriguing. Another big takeaway with that is the Colts defense looked miserable. God, they looked bad.
Yeah, we were cutting through them like butter.
Oh, there was open receivers.
Those running backs.
That final game-winning drive that Matthew Stafford led, they're wide open receivers. I mean, it was bad. It was bad. But good Stafford. And last one, Jameis Winston, sophomore quarterback. 4 touchdown passes, looking really good. I was really high on him going into the season. And my big thing with Jameis Winston is this is his first offseason.
Yeah.
Ever. Really ever. Like, literally ever. In high school, played multiple sports. He goes to Florida State. What does he do? Plays baseball, too. Never had a football offseason. Played baseball. This is his first last year coming out. He was in draft stuff the entire time. First full offseason. And I'm really thinking big things for Winston this year.
Kind of nice. Winston seemed like a guy that might get caught up in some controversy in his career. He had some controversy going into his rookie season. He kind of stayed out of the media and didn't really make any. Yeah, it was just kind of a quiet offseason for him, which is
good for a quarterback. That's good.
You definitely don't want your quarterback in the news, right? You don't want him in the news for some sort of accident. You don't want him dating a Kardashian. You don't want any type of nonsense. You kind of want. And that was a question mark with him. He had some. It wasn't the. Wasn't seen as like the straight edge type of guy that most teams are looking for in their quarterback, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I really expect big things out of them. And Andrew Luck, last one here. Andrew Luck looked great.
Hold on. Did Jameis Winston win the Heisman and then get caught stealing crab legs a couple weeks later?
No, that was not that same season.
Different seasons?
Believe. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was just thinking that was a hilarious. It just came in my mind about.
Yeah, it was
a funny guy.
Yeah.
All right. Move along.
But Andrew Luck, a great over 400 yards, 4 touchdowns too. But my take with that team is bad.
Yeah.
That is a bad team. I think that defense looked. Them and Cleveland looked like the two worst defenses in the NFL, and their offensive line is so suspect. They have a lot of weapons. I mean, Moncrief, Hilton, Dorsett, Gore, good weapons, but that team is a lot. Is bad.
I mean, you win and you
Luck
lose.
Is going to have to be great. Luck is going to have to be great.
I think Luck is great. I never got as down on him as people did last year. I think he's one of the toughest quarterbacks in the NFL.
He was injured all last year. His injury line last year was insane. There's no way he should have been on the field. Ever.
Nuts. Yeah. I think Pagano might be the worst head coach in the NFL.
You were telling us earlier today. And it kind of surprised me, Pagano. But now I think about it, it's... Why can't... They have such a great quarterback. How can you not... How do you have such a downfall, is my question.
I think if it was anyone else, I think they would have lost their job. But I think Pagano gets to keep his job. And I hate to be the guy that brings this up. But I think Pagano gets to keep his job because he had cancer. And no one wants to be the guy that fired the guy that had cancer.
And not that they like went 2 years ago into the playoffs and made some runs. And
I don't know. I just
came back and beat the Chiefs in the first round.
Predictable offense, not as strong. It hasn't been able to establish a strong defense for years now.
I think the biggest thing is his defense and offensive line, but... Yeah, I mean, Pagano is an interesting pick. I think Jeff Fisher's the worst coach to lead, but that's another topic. Anyway, we'll move on from that. We got a lot to get to here. What I want to jump into next year, Bob, is the three young quarterbacks that made their first start.
Yeah.
You had three of them. We'll start with Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, the rookie from North Dakota State, starting for the Philadelphia Eagles, went 22 for 37, 2 touchdowns and no picks, and really showed a lot of poise. He made some dimes for throws.
Yeah.
His throw to Jordan Matthews, first touchdown, and then Nelson Aguilar, great throws. He was playing Cleveland. That's a caveat. Cleveland Browns looked awful, but still, looked good. What's your take on that?
I've been high on Carson Wentz. I think he should have been the number one overall pick in the draft.
You said that pre-draft, so you get points.
I did say that pre-draft. I mean, we haven't seen Goff play yet. All words are that he's not looking good, and there's a lot of bust potential there. People's not happy with the way he looks to start his rookie year. But I'm impressed with Carson Wentz. Everything's good. Right? Big, tall athlete, moves well, and has composure. It was a lot of questions coming from a small school the way he did, but so far it's looking good. I'm not really expecting him to end up being in the elite class of quarterbacks in the NFL, but I do see him as a guy that's going to be a quarterback that's going to hold the Eagles together for the next 7-8 years.
I think if you're a Philly fan, you are excited. You're very optimistic. However,
nice to
relax.
Have your franchise quarterback in place.
Relax. I don't know about yet. It's one game, and it's against the worst team in the NFL. Relax.
One game, worst team in the NFL, and it's a rookie quarterback. Like, those pick sixes are coming.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And he's going to go through his bumps, but I think the Eagles will give him at least 3 years of really 100% confidence to really prove himself, and I think he'll be okay. Moving on. The big one, Dak Prescott. The sensation from the preseason, start for the Dallas Cowboys against the Giants. He went 25 for 45, 227 yards, no touchdowns, no picks.
Could have had a couple touchdowns if his wide receivers didn't drop the ball, though.
Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley both dropped a potential touchdowns.
Yeah. I'm impressed with Prescott. I think he looks pretty good. And I think the real question on everyone's mind is how good does Prescott have to look to get them to move on from Tony Romo?
It's their joke. It's not going to happen.
Could happen.
Definitely not this year.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year if he breaks his collarbone again.
Or his back.
Or his back.
Is he dealing with two broken collarbone issues, two back injuries?
He's not going to walk when he's 50.
There's this conspiracy theory out there that says, like, Romo just wants to make $20 million a year. So he just goes out there, gets hit, gets an injury, and then he gets to play golf for the
stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm not even going to talk about that anymore. That's not even a conspiracy.
It's just this. He doesn't seem to be able to hold it together for a whole season.
That hit he took was a really hard hit, though. You're right, but he's taking some hard hits.
Does he keep himself in good enough shape to be able to take hard hits?
I don't know. I'm not freaking with him every day. It looks like he does. He's an NFL quarterback. I hope he does.
Doesn't look that impressive to me.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about Dak Prescott here. The thing that worries me about Dak Prescott is most of his passes. He targeted Cole Beasley and Jason Witten for 50-60% of his passes. And all those passes are inside the numbers. All on the inside. Kind of the safety throws. Quick option routes. Really safe throws. And Dez Bryant had one catch for 8 yards. One catch for 8 yards. Your best player on offense. And I would like to see Prescott. I mean, I'm being way, way, way over analyzing this. For a rookie, he looks like a lot of poise, looks good. But I'm just saying, a quarterback, you need to be able to challenge the whole field, or else teams are going to eat you up. He got in the red zone when the field shrinks, and he got completely shut down. They couldn't score in the red zone. So my point is, can he improve on to expanding those outside throws and making that defense not be so compact? The opponent's defense that face him.
Does the defense a lot of favors by not making them honest on the deep routes, right?
Correct.
Makes it an easier game.
Granted, give the Giants credit. They took away Dez Bryant. They took away Ezekiel Elliott. What about Terrence Williams not getting out of bounds there at the end of the game?
Mental error. He's been in the league long enough to know he's got to get out of bounds. Stupid.
Well, it's ridiculous that people are blaming Prescott. Are you kidding me? You're a professional NFL player.
How's Prescott supposed to... What's he supposed to do? Run out there and push him out of bounds?
Well, they're saying the huddle, you tell everyone, make sure you get out of bounds. That's fair enough. That's a fair argument. But you're a professional NFL player. You don't understand to get out of bounds in that situation? What the hell?
He's been playing for the Cowboys.
Like four years.
Yeah, he's been there long enough to understand football, to know that he's got to get out of bounds when there's 10 seconds left on the game clock.
Completely agree.
Stupid.
All right, so let's move on here to Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Garoppolo. Impressive, man. Garoppolo looked like a...
He looked poised. He looked like a poised quarterback.
Yeah.
Athletic. And he was 24 for 33, 264 yards, one touchdown, no picks. And this was, remind you, without Gronk and without two starting offensive linemen.
Without his number one offensive weapon and without
two
starting offensive linemen.
Yeah. And
against a really defense in an away game.
Correct. I mean, granted, we talked about Bill Belichick putting him in position to win, but he showed a lot of poise and made some really good throws. And I'm kind of the same thing, though. I'm saying hold your horses. Don't freaking make the Matt Flinden mistake where you're judging off of one game and you're going to ultimately give up a first-round pick to get him. But he showed a lot of poise. And going to Arizona into that environment and come out with a victory is very impressive.
I mean, it's got to help him to be able to have a mentor like Tom Brady and be able to prepare for the game with one of the best that's ever done it.
Yeah.
So, and you just got, obviously, one of the best head coaches of all time also. Arguably the best head coach of all time and the best quarterback of all time ahead of him. Got guys that he could pick their game and learn from him. So, I was impressed with him. I think he's helping out the... it'll be interesting to see if Patriots end up using him in a trade situation, either at the trade deadline this year once Brady's back or at the end of the season, see if they're able to snag a first-round pick or a second-round pick for him.
We'll see what happens. So, Bob, real quick, out of those three quarterbacks, which was most impressive?
Garoppolo. I mean, I was impressed with Wentz and his ability to win his first game and not throw any picks.
I'm taking Wentz.
That was impressive by Wentz, but that was the Cleveland Browns. Garoppolo goes out there and beats the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona.
Completely agree in that aspect. I kind of expected out of Garoppolo. I did not expect the precision out of Wentz.
I was not expecting that from Garoppolo. I was expecting Arizona to...
The one touchdown he did throw was a complete blown coverage, and Hogan was wide open.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. But anyway, moving on here. All right, Bob, let's go on to some fantasy football.
I love fantasy football.
Right? How'd your teams do this weekend?
A couple victories.
So, 2-0, huh?
Yeah, big time.
Alright, I was 3-1. I actually lost. In the one game league
You're in four leagues.
Yeah, and the one I lost was to your brother. Put up 140 points on me.
Fantasy football runs strong in this family.
I had like the third highest. Yeah. I would have beat you.
I'm sure you would have. Yeah, I think I only scored like 95 points. My running backs kind of let me down. Eddie Lacy and Mark Ingram only put together 14 points between the two of them. But I'm saving face. I'm excited for my season. A lot of big time players. A lot of big letdowns.
Yeah. So let's get into this, Bob. There's a lot of big stats this week, right? Yeah. Huge ones. But I'm gonna do a little game per se or whatever. Let's do buy or sell. So I'm going to name some players, and you're going to either buy them that they're going to be key contributors the whole season, or you're going to sell them as they're not going to be as good as where they were drafted.
Okay.
All right, first one. Adrian Peterson.
Okay. Adrian Peterson.
You buying or selling him?
I'm buying, big time. He had a bad game. Bad game. What did he, like 30 yards on 19 carries or something
very,
like that?
Very, very bad.
He didn't look good. Wasn't able to make those explosive types of plays, get through the holes in the defense like we're used to from him. But Adrian Peterson's one of the best running backs to ever don a uniform. And if there's an angsty Peterson owner in your league, I recommend suggesting a trade for him because I expect big things out of him still. I still think he's definitely going to be at least top 10 running back, but I expect him to finish top 5 before the end of the season.
Completely agree. This is a stupid question, in my opinion, and I asked it. Isn't that funny? But this was actually a very, very common question that I was hearing. And that, if you have a Peterson fan that's angry and not as optimistic, that's how you win your league. Go trade for Peterson. Go completely make him look like a fool. You'll be doing fine. All right, next player, Bob. I'll start with this one. Devontae Freeman.
This is interesting.
You want to go first? Or you want
me to go? You go ahead. Go ahead.
I completely am selling Devontae Freeman, opposite of Peterson.
Ooh, okay.
So Freeman had a not very good game. Really, he did not look very explosive. He got his touches, didn't make the most of them. And the reason why I'm selling him is because his backup, Tevin Coleman, looked explosive. 95 yards receiving for Tevin Coleman, the running back. Neither of them averaged much on the ground. Tevin Coleman averaged 2.8 yards a carry. Not very good. But you know what Freeman averaged? 1.8 yards a carry. Really bad. So I just believe that for where he was drafted, he is not going to be that player you were looking for. And I'm very down on him, and I would sell.
Yeah, I mean, I'll phrase it this way. I am buying the Atlanta Hawks offense this season.
What did you say?
The Atlanta Falcons offense this season. As I'm expecting them to do well, and I'm expecting their offense to do well. But I actively avoided drafting Devontae Freeman, and I'm not surprised to see him failing early. I thought Tevin Coleman would probably have a bounce back year and take a lot of yardage away from him, and he might be the more talented back between the two of them. So
you're buying. We'll sell at that. We're both selling.
Devontae Freeman, yeah.
Both selling on Freeman. Next one, Dez Bryant. Buying or selling?
Selling.
Really?
I'm selling Dez Bryant, yeah. Another guy that I actively avoided drafting. I don't buy him as a top 5 wide receiver. Extremely skeptical of his quarterback situation. People are saying, Romo gets back, everything will be better. Romo coming back is a big question mark in my mind. And Dez Bryant's also coming back from a season-ending injury, and he's got to reestablish himself to get that type of respect in my mind. And there's just so many question marks on him.
All right.
I'm not hyped on
him. All right, Bob. I'm completely buying Dez Bryant. And the reason why? I don't think his production would be great with Prescott. Do I think he'll get in the end zone? Yes, I think he's a great goal line target. However, when Romo comes back, he's going to go back to being a really, really, really good receiver.
Okay.
And that's what I would hope for. I'm buying him for when Romo comes back.
All right.
So I'm looking, if he has another bad week this week, I might be looking to trade for him. But let's move on here. Willie Snead, the receiver for the Saints, had 170 yards receiving and a touchdown this week. And Bob, I believe that I was pretty high on Willie Snead going into the season, wasn't I?
Yeah, you just kind of throw this one in there to lick your own chops a little bit. What's it called? Just boost your ego. Whatever it is. Yeah, I just Matt's been calling Willie Snead the entire offseason, and Willie Snead bust off with around the top wide receiver game for the week.
He was great, and my thing is, I'm buying him. I think that he is going to continually see at least 5 to 6 catches every week and be a vocal part of that Saints offense who throws the ball nonstop. So I am buying Willie Snead.
Yeah, I mean, I got a tough time not to at least put Willie Snead into your flex position if you got him on your roster with how much Breeze likes to throw the ball, how much he likes to spread it around, and considering he's one of the, it looks like Cooks and him are definitely the top two options that Breeze is looking for, so I feel like you got to respect him at least as a wide receiver 2 or wide receiver 3, put him in the game.
I agree. So next, Spencer Ware, running back Kansas City. Is once Jamaal Charles comes back, are you still buying him?
No, I'm selling. Selling Spencer Ware. We'll see how long it takes Jamaal Charles to come back, but I believe that he is a talented enough guy. And once he gets back in the game, the best you can hope for out of Spencer Ware would be running back by committee or running back 2 option, kind of flex player. But while Jamaal Charles is out, you definitely got to play Spencer Ware. He's going to be a top producer in the league. But then after that point, his value diminishes almost.
I would agree. I wouldn't trust him with Charles at 100% getting reps. I do think he will still get carries, and he will still be a part of that offense. And I think he's the top handcuff. Him and D'Angelo Williams are the two top handcuffs in this league for running backs because they are both great, really good players. And Spencer Ware is a great receiving running back. He had over 130 yards receiving.
D'Angelo Williams just blew up also.
Yeah, D'Angelo Williams tonight was insane.
And same situation with D'Angelo Williams. If you got him, start him. But when Le'Veon Bell comes back from suspension, that party ends. You know, he's no longer a fantasy asset for that time. You don't drop him in this case of an injury because all of a sudden you've got a top producer again. But he's not a fantasy starter.
No way in hell drop him. And if you see him in the waiver wire, you better pick one of those two up.
Agreed.
Last one, Lions running back backfield, Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah.
Okay, this is tough for me to say. Amir Abdullah is happy as hell with how he looked in week 1, but as a fantasy commodity, I'm selling him.
A big Lions fan even.
Huge Lions fan, and I'm a huge Amir Abdullah fan. I'm happy to saw that we have him on the team, but I saw some bad signs for him as a fantasy asset.
What are those signs?
Looks like he might give up goal line duties and maybe short yardage situations to Dwayne Washington, who's a bigger, stronger running back than he is. Gave up a goal line touch. He wasn't able to convert a goal line touchdown. Dwayne Washington came in the next play and took it from him, and I wouldn't be surprised if they favor Dwayne Washington in that situation in the future. So that's never a good sign. Touchdowns are so important. And then also just how strong Theo Riddick looks in the passing game. Not that Amir Abdullah didn't look strong. He was able to catch a lot of passes and make big plays also. But it just looks like it's going to be a running back by committee in Detroit. So
I think that this is going to be – their running back situation will be strictly based on their matchup. Who are they playing? I mean, the Colts have looked awful. The Colts look so bad. They are running the ball all over the Colts, throwing the ball. They can do whatever they want. So I don't read – I think it's encouraging, but I don't read too much into it. I think it's going to be matchup-driven based. And in DraftKings, Daily Fantasy, Theo Riddick, great option.
I think Theo Riddick is a flex asset in PPR leagues. Like, I just think he's going to catch enough passes.
I think Abdullah is a flex option in PPR leagues too.
Agreed.
Abdullah will catch some passes, and I think Abdullah has a better chance of getting the end zone week in and win out than Theo Riddick does.
Definitely. But Riddick almost purely gets targeted on passes. He's probably going to average 5 or 6 receptions.
So if you had to keep one, which one are you keeping?
In regular standard format, I'm keeping Abdullah. In flex, I'm keeping Theo. I'm keeping Riddick.
I would agree.
Okay.
All right. Moving on here. So
I'm not ready to move on yet. I got a couple for you.
Oh, all right.
Jameis Winston.
Bye. I think he's having a breakout year. He's one of my breakout players going into the season. four TD passes, and I really see high things from Jameis Winston this year.
I'm selling.
Who?
Yeah.
Why?
I just don't have a lot of confidence in his mental fortitude and his strength mentally.
That's the second time you used fortitude in one podcast. Pretty good.
I like it. I like. I missed my opportunity to use some other big words, so I'm sticking to that one.
I don't know how big of a word fortitude is, but it's not a very common word.
Shut up, Matt. All right. That so I'm just think there's a lot of value at the quarterback position, and I think there's a lot of guys that I expect to have better seasons than him that will be available. And
okay, who's not a top guy you see be better than him? And I'll see if I agree.
Ryan. I think Matt Ryan is available in a lot of leagues, and I think he's going to end up as a top 10 quarterback at the end of the season. I don't think Winston will.
I think Jameis Winston will finish higher than Matt Ryan at the end of the season.
It's interesting. I just feel like Matt Ryan is being disrespected. He has a history of pedigree.
He deserves to be, though. His pedigree is not that strong.
Every year, he's finished as a top 10 quarterback efficient rating, except for last season.
I'm not a fantasy quarterback. I'm talking about efficiency. I'm talking about fantasy. And I don't believe that efficiency.
He's got a top wide receiver option in the league.
I think you pulled that efficiency stat out of your butt.
I read it on a fantasy website.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they pulled it out of their butt, but... That was my opinion.
I'm kind of curious. I want to look that up.
Yeah, we'll look
either
it
way,
up.
Fantasy,
we'll
I don't think
efficiently,
so.
He's been a good quarterback. He's got a top wide receiver, like maybe the number one wide receiver option in the league, if not definitely top three. And a new guy that I like a lot, Mohamed Sanu, on the team. I just expect their offense to be to move the ball a lot, and I think Matt Ryan's going to end up as a top 10 quarterback. Let me think. Some other guys that I like. I like Stafford. He's been valued underneath.
I like
Winston
Stafford
in a lot
more
of
than Ryan.
Yeah, I like both of those guys over Jameis Winston. All right,
okay.
But you're kind of selling on Ryan, buying on Stafford. Is that what you said?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
All right, moving on here. Let's move on here to some free agent wire pickups. You know, that's how you win your fantasy. You got to be constantly on the waiver wire. That's how you win.
Be looking for this tomorrow, guys. Like, if you let tomorrow go by and you didn't put a waiver claim, it gets to Thursday and you haven't put in any waiver claims, or it gets to Wednesday when guys are allowed to pick people up and you haven't put in any waiver claims, you're probably not going to be active in your football league. Tuesday is a big day to go on there and pick up free agents in your fantasy football league.
You got to be constantly on it. So some big ones. My big one that I really liked is Tajay Sharp. Number one receiver for the Tennessee Titans.
You got him in all your leagues.
I got him in all my leagues this year. He looked great in the preseason. He's a rookie out of UMass, fifth-round pick. Had 7 receptions, 76 yards, and 11 targets. And he's the clear-cut number one receiver for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I'll be looking for him.
I like it a lot. And then Mohamed Sanu, the guy you like a lot, number two for the Falcons. Had a touchdown, 50 yards, looked good.
Habitually underrated. I thought he was great in Cincinnati, and I think he's going to do big things for Atlanta.
So I've written down here Tevin Coleman as well, but he's obviously...
If Tevin Coleman is in your league, pick that guy up.
I don't think he's going to be available in many leagues.
Probably not.
Another one, Will Fuller, the rookie out of Notre Dame, plays for the Houston Texans, had over 100 yards and a touchdown in his debut. Impressive. Last, I have Jameis Winston on here, we've already talked about. An interesting one here, Bobby. Brandon Rashard. I'm guessing he's going to win the for sure backup duties now behind Latavius Murray as the backup running back for the Oakland Raiders. He had a 75-yard touchdown, and he has shown breakaway potential in his short-lived career in the NFL with the preseason and this first career game. But he had like 6 touches and well over 100 yards. Very impressive. So keep an eye on him.
Do you see him as a guy that could potentially take over starting duties? Because I would say Latavius Murray has shown a lot more hype than production to this point in his career.
I would agree, and I think Murray could transition more into a short yardage goal line person, and Brashard be more of their every down back. Yeah. Especially the way their offense
is established.
It'd be interesting.
I mean, with the way their offense is moving, if there's a guy that has potential to take over running back one duties for the Oakland Raiders, you got to jump on that. So if you're looking for a guy to take a flyer on, I'm big on Brashard.
Big time, big time. And one last one I want to get to is the really sad, awful news. The worst injury we had of the whole Week 1 NFL season was Keenan Allen, the star receiver for the San Diego Chargers, tears his ACL in a non-contact play. It was confirmed today the ACL is torn. And you have to feel really bad for the guy. The guy hurt his kidney last year. He's on IR. for much of the season last year when he was on pace to be one of the best receivers in football. And this week, this game, he has 6 receptions, over 60 yards in the first half, and then tears the ACL. So now he's going to be on IR for the rest of the year again. Feel really bad for him. But moving on, from a fantasy perspective, some really intriguing guys are Tyrell Williams. He is the more freakish athlete guy. Big, fast, freak athlete. Can he develop into being that key guy and develop chemistry with Phillip Rivers? And second is Travis Benjamin, the old Cleveland Browns receiver.
I can see Travis Benjamin having a lot of success with Phillip Rivers. Especially with Keenan Allen going down, it seems like he might be able to fill
PPR,
that role pretty
PPR
well.
PPR leagues, I think it could be very useful.
Yeah.
Those are the names there. And just to cover some injuries in the NFL, again, Keenan Allen, you have Demaryius Thomas. He's fighting a hip injury, which he entered in the game. But Gary Kubiak came out today saying that he thinks he'll be able to practice one day this week and is optimistic he will play this weekend. So that's really good news. People thought he might miss up to 4 weeks with his injury earlier in the day. It's a big player for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then RG3, he fractured his shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder, and is put on IR. He said he can come back this season, but tough blow for RG3.
Sucks, man. RG3 is kind of a guy that seems like he's been kind of walking the line between will he be able to make a career out of this, or is he going to be out of the league in a couple years? And every time he gets one of these injuries, that line seems to lean a little bit to the right. You know what I'm saying? It's a bummer.
It's a bummer. No doubt.
But the Browns are irrelevant.
They're irrelevant. That's exactly what I was about to say.
So maybe they'll get the first pick and be able to take Deshaun Watson or whichever quarterback they feel.
Something that way.
Yeah.
And lastly, Zach Ertz is going to miss week 2 with an injury as well. All right, Bob. So what? We're winding down this podcast. Any last thoughts here?
Yeah, I think I was big time stoked on another Lions player. Eric Ebron is available in a lot of leagues at the tight end spot. And, I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to live up to his draft position, considering the guys that were drafted right behind him in Aaron Donald and Odell Beckham. But in fantasy, he looks like he's going to be a relevant tight end. And
you have to hope.
He becomes a new goal line target for Stafford.
He's a freak athletically. If he can put it together mentally, he could be a stud.
Just taking Calvin Johnson out of the equation strengthens his stock quite a bit, because now he's the big,
more
strong
targets.
Guy in the air.
He's more targets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Big
I
time.
Agree.
Let me think. Let's close this out with just want to thank the listeners for sticking by us. We've been having some IT problems, but we are going to continue with consistently providing
sports
top
knowledge,
yeah,
whatever we
yeah.
got. And
top
if you guys have any questions, any statements, we've been getting a lot of feedback from our listeners, and it's been really good. And so if you have any questions, want us to talk about something else, hit us up, Ramtown Riot on Twitter or at ramtownriot@gmail.com.
All right. You guys have a good week. Talk to you next Monday.
All right. Thanks, guys.